Good morning again. We're going to welcome everyone to the Health Science Committee meeting. Winter, if you would take roll call, please.
Yes, sir.
Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Vice Chair Carter.
Here.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brooks.
Here.
Regent Moran.
Here.
Regent Tarkanian. You have a quorum.
Thank you, Winter. We will go to item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment in Reno? Seeing none, is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Any public comment here in Las Vegas? Henderson. Seeing no public comment, we'll go to item two, the minutes. We'll consider approval of the minutes from September 10th, 2021. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Regent Moran to approve. Do I have a second?
Second.
Vice Chair Carter. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of passing, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Chair's report, just briefly, with our health science schools and programs, a sincere thank you for everyone stepping forward, of course, during this pandemic and showing the importance and the value of our health science programs throughout the state. Well, job well done. We'll go to item number four. NCHI COVID-19 guidance overview and information update. We are going to first start with Dr. Donnelly in Elko. Dr. Donnelly.
For the record, Dr. Amber Donnelly, Dean of Health Science and Human Services at Great Basin College. Good morning, Regents. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today regarding the COVID-19 efforts in the rural counties. As I talk to you today, it is with a sense of relief as we are starting to see positive signs that there has been significant changes in the spread of the COVID-19. I would like to acknowledge and commend the internal NCHI COVID task force. This year has been full of challenges. With COVID mitigation efforts and the members of the task force have been a big part in helping create positive impacts that are still being taken place today. This is largely due to a system approach and open lines of communication from all institutions, making sure the needs are being met, not only for the NCHI as a whole, but impacts to our communities on a much greater level. With that, I am pleased to report the following. Contact tracing is based out of the GBC campus for four counties. This includes Elko, Lander, Humboldt, and Eureka. We help to manage the information and the reporting that is sent to the state for the K-12 schools, hospitals, long-term care facilities, detention centers, jails, Indian Health Services, and our tribal communities, as well as our community populations. Our highest caseload was close to 700 active cases a day, and this week we are finally down to a rolling average of around 50 to 60 cases a week. A focus on vaccination throughout each of these counties has been ongoing. However, the percentages are still low, with Humboldt at 41%, Elko at 36%, Lander at 35%, and Eureka at 29%. We have seen a trend with COVID-19 over the past 2 years, where spring is always significantly lower for transmission. I think we still need to be diligent in our support of the vaccine efforts. If this trend continues and we see an increase in cases in the fall, the low vaccine rates will likely play a part in impacting rural communities and those that are not vaccinated. During the semester, we have completed COVID testing on students who are returning to housing and most of our health science students who are rotating through our clinics and hospitals. These include nursing students, CNA, radiology, paramedic, and EMT, but these facilities are still requiring some pre-screening. Currently, those who want to wear a mask can be seen on campus as those who are choosing not to. There does not seem to be any animosity as a result of those individual decisions. In closing, I would like to thank the President, Joyce Hellens, of excuse me. In closing, I would like to thank GBC President Joyce Hellens for her continued support of the COVID-19 efforts. In addition, we receive a lot of support from the State of Nevada Public Health Department and are grateful for those many individuals that communicate with us on a daily basis. Thank you for your time, and I would welcome any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Dr. Donnelly, for your update. Seeing no questions, we will stay here and have Assistant Director of Emergency Management, Greg May, give us an update, please.
Good morning, Chair DeBrava, committee members, presidents, Chancellor Rose. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Greg May. I'm the Assistant Director of Emergency Management for University Police Services Southern Command. For Director Garcia, who was unable to attend today, I'll be providing a very brief COVID-19 update for Southern Nevada. Since your last update, Southern Nevada has seen a significant decrease of COVID-19 cases, which is mirroring trends across the United States, with confirmed case counts down in Clark County as well as on our campuses. As COVID cases are trending downward, we're also winding down our COVID operations. With the widespread of availability of rapid COVID self-testing kits, we've seen a drastic reduction in demand for mass COVID testing over the past 2 months. UNLV COVID testing site located at Sam Boyd Stadium will be closing as of March the 10th. This will conclude an outstanding 2-year partnership with Clark County, Southern Nevada Health District, and the Nevada National Guard. The CSN COVID testing sites, however, will continue to operate on all 3 campuses through the end of the semester, with the potential for an extension if needed. COVID testing continues to be offered through the UNLV Student Health Center, the Southern Nevada Health District, and other medical providers throughout the valley. COVID case reporting, contact tracing, and case management will continue through the spring semester and into the summer. I am pleased to report that to date, UNLV, the College of Southern Nevada, and Nevada State College have facilitated 387,825 COVID tests at NCHI facilities, 152,134 vaccinations, and have distributed more than 1,400 rapid COVID tests to students, faculty, staff, and the broader community. Finally, Director Garcia has been working with the Public Employees Benefit Provider, PEB, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the HR departments of NCHI institutions to create appropriate processes and protocols for PEB-provided testing for those who are lacking a vaccine. The testing for those individuals commenced on February 27th for our NCHI institutions. That ends my report, and I'm available for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Assistant Director May. Any questions for the Assistant Director? Thank you for your report.
Thank you.
And it's my understanding that Dr. Hug English is not available, but Council Reynolds, did you have any update that you wanted to offer?
Yeah, thank you, Chair DeBrava. Joe Reynolds for the record. Dr. Hug English was unable to make it this morning, but she did just send me her prepared remarks that I will read in the record. Good morning, Chair DeBrava, members of the board. For the record, I'm Cheryl Hung English, Director of the Student Health Center at the University of Nevada, Reno. I'm here today to give updates about COVID-19 for Washoe County and for our UNR campus. I feel that I say this each time I come, but much has changed over the past few months. The COVID roller coaster has continued to spin. We went through the 2021 summer surge with the Delta variant, followed by decreasing numbers in the fall, only to have the Omicron variant take us by storm in early January 2022. With Omicron's increased infectivity, we saw the highest COVID-19 case numbers throughout our state that we had seen throughout the entire pandemic. Yet as fast as the Omicron variant has appeared, the case numbers have declined almost as rapidly. In mid to late January, Washoe County daily case numbers averaged about 1,703, with over 1,690 cases per 100,000 population and a positivity rate of 32%. As of today, we have an average of 37 daily cases, less than 50 cases per 100,000 population, and a positivity rate of 10.7%. On our campus, we've had similar trends in vaccination rates and more testing and treatment options available. On our UNR campus, over 98% of our faculty and staff and over 87% of our students are vaccinated. While not perfect, vaccination remains the most important tool we have in combating severe illness, hospitalization, and death from the virus. While we have been surprised before by this virus, it does appear that we may be shifting from a pandemic to an endemic phase, and rather than trying to eradicate COVID-19, finding ways to manage and live with it. I think we as INSHE institutions should be proud of all the mitigation strategies that we have employed to help promote the health and safety of our campuses. We must continue our efforts and must stay watchful and ready to implement changes if needed. And again, those are remarks on behalf of Dr. Hug English.
Thank you, General Counsel Reynolds, for putting those remarks into the record. Any questions regarding item four or comments? Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. And I'm not on the committee, but at the last meeting, I'd requested a new business item as far as looking at building metrics. And I think one of the flaws, not that any of us know what how this is going to work out, is that we reacted to surges and drops and surges and drops. And I'd rather see us establish a set of metrics to determine when we have to go to mask wearing, you know, if we pop above 10% or 15%, or I would just like the task force, as I mentioned, new business, so I'm just bringing that, is just actual metrics as to how we deal with it going from a pandemic to an endemic.
Thank you, Regent Geddes, for reminding us of that. And Councilor Reynolds, I see you taking some notes there. I appreciate that. Okay. Seeing no other comments or questions, we'll go to item five, UNLV Kirkcoyne School of Medicine report. Dean Kahn.
For the record, Mark Kahn, I'm the Dean of the Kirkcoyne School of Medicine and Vice President for Health Affairs at UNLV. Thank you for the kind introduction, Madam Chancellor, Presidents, Regents, Chair DeBrava, and Vice Chair Carter. If I could have my next slide, I think I can actually do this myself. There we go. So we're on a target to move into our new 130,000 square foot medical education building late summer, early fall. We really look forward to that. We've begun planning in earnest for the Academic Health Center. And I should mention, I understand that ENCHI has guidelines for the word center. This is a term used in the medical literature, so that's why it's here. But really, it's an initiative at this point. And this is a way that we're bringing together the five health science schools at UNLV, in addition to representatives of behavioral and mental health, to provide really comprehensive care for our community and comprehensive research and comprehensive education. The School of Medicine has obtained two gifts now for endowed chairs, our first two. We have one in orthopedics, and right before the winter holidays, we got an endowed chair for OB-GYN. There's been a leadership change in our practice plan. Ms. Joanne Strobe is now the interim president and CEO, and Dr. Allison Netsky is the interim vice dean for clinical affairs. From an academic affairs perspective, we now have a completed MD, MPH, and that should say MD, MD, MBA program. I think both of those are going to be additions to our scholarly offerings for our students. We're in planning for a Master of Science in Medical Sciences for students who want to go to medical school but may not quite have the academic qualifications. And that's in an effort to better serve our community. We're also in discussion with an MD-JD program and an MD-PhD program. Last Friday, we had our white coat ceremony where we welcomed new students into their clinical service. We have match day. That'll be true also for my colleague, Dr. Piasecki, on March 18th. Graduation is May 6th, and we have a new orientation. So we continue this life process of educating the next generation of physicians for our community. There are two exams now that medical students have to take and pass in order to go on to residency. We have done well in both of these exams. Our median score is about 5 points above the national mean for step one. That exam is taken after students complete their basic sciences. Step two, students take during their fourth year of medical school, and we're about 10 points higher as an average than the national. We've not had a student, fortunately, fail step two yet, and no student since 2019 has failed step one. So we think this is a good national metric to show that we're appropriately educating our students. We've already talked about new degrees. This is a complicated table, but suffice it to say that in the 5 years that we've been in operation, we've only had one student withdraw. None have been dismissed, so we have a very good retention rate. We have had students delay graduation. Often that's to get an additional degree, like an MPH degree, or now they can get an MBA degree, or to do research. But we've had very, very good retention. From an admissions perspective, we had 1,500 applications this year. This is out of date. We've accepted, I think, somewhere around 50 students with high GPAs, high MCATs. Nearly all accepted students are Nevada residents, and every student at least has a connection to Nevada. True to our mission to care for our community, we have a number of first-generation students. We have good diversity. We have veterans. We have rural students. And again, our mission is to care for our community, and we want to have a class that looks like our community, and we want to graduate doctors that look like our community. From a graduate medical education or residency perspective, our residents and fellows have persisted in spite of the pandemic. We have about 300 residents and fellows in our program. We've recently applied for expansion. CMS, the group that pays Medicare and Medicaid services that pay for residents for the first time since 1996, has a process to get more residents. In the state of Nevada, we have 403 funded residency positions. Compare that to a state like New York that has 21,000. We are woefully undersubscribed, and if we're going to get doctors to stay in the state, we have to work together to increase the number of residency positions. I know my friends and colleagues at UNR are doing the exact same thing, and we have to do this for our state. We, our residents and fellows are involved in research. They present nationally, and there's a whole host of organizations in your packet for which they represent. From a research perspective, we've had 14 new grant awards this year, totaling $5.5 million. They include anything from first episode psychosis to traffic safety. And again, we're focusing on our research on things that impact our community and things that help us to care for our community. We currently have applications to the tune of about $35 million that are outstanding. And again, our total awards now are approaching about $13 million. As we started out as a new school, research is a priority, but that had to take a backseat to clinical care and education and community engagement. Now we're really building out our research portfolio. We're actively recruiting for a new associate dean for research as well. Clinical trials are somewhat low-hanging fruit and important to our community. We have 8 clinical trials, and again, as I mentioned, we have about $36 million, of submitted grant proposals. Diversity and inclusion is what really ties us all together. We have an associate dean for diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're recruiting for an assistant dean. We're partnering with faculty affairs, and we're outreaching into communities, again, to get the most diverse student class that we can. There's an undergraduate pipeline program known as a cohort program. And again, we're getting into the community to make sure that folks know that health careers in healthcare are a possibility, careers in medicine are a possibility. And again, we want to train the future workforce for our population. We've been having a great development year. In addition to our donated medical education building, we ended the calendar year of 2021 with $4.4 million in philanthropy, an increase of almost $1 million over goal and well ahead of fiscal year 2021. I've mentioned our second endowed chair. We fundraise around the White Coat ceremony. We raised $60,000. Again, that goes towards scholarship. In the first quarter of this year, we're expecting a $2 million planned gift for scholarships and two programmatic gifts in the seven-figure range. So we hope to end the year with about $7 million in philanthropy, not counting the building. And we're undergoing a feasibility study for a fundraising campaign for the School of Medicine and Academic Health. The practice plan, the group that our docs that take care of patients, we had an audit that revealed that our accounting was accurate, and we had a clean audit in June 30th, 2021. I've listed total revenue by year. You can see that's going up. Operating expenses have remained relatively constant. And from an operating income perspective, last year we had a positive operating margin. Through November 30th, that should say 2021, we had an operating deficit, but we typically do much better the second half of the year, and we're expecting at least a break-even budget. We've already talked about vaccinations. I'm going to skip that. As we move forward with the practice plan and the School of Medicine, one of the important things that we're doing is we're developing community partnerships. We need to bring certain services to our community, cancer care being one of them. And we're looking for partners within our community and outside. As the Academic Health Center, we want to bring these entities together, again, to improve and to provide coordinated health care for our population. We're also renegotiating contracts with insurers and hospitals. We do have open positions in our practice plan, as is true throughout our community, and we're working to fill them as well. With that, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and others, I conclude my report, and I'm open to questions.
Thank you, Dean Kahn, for the presentation. And we'll go to Regent Perkins for a question.
Thank you. I know I'm not on this committee, so thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned about the residency program. What can we do as regents to help garner more residents for the state of Nevada?
So I think, you know, again, CMS, the group that funds the majority of residency programs in the country, fixed positions in 1996 as part of the Balanced Budget Act. As I mentioned, as part of Building Back Better, they have expanded, and they're going to fund 1,000 residency programs across the country with a maximum of 25 programs per hospital. The monies actually go to hospitals. So we're working with our partner UMC with this. When you look at what they're looking for, we check off probably every box, right? So it's programs that are over cap, meaning that the hospital has more residents, they're paying for more residents than they get funded for. We're about 50 over cap at UMC. Rural, we're an urban center, but really surrounded by a rural area, underserved communities. So we check off every box, the application. We've hired a consultant to help us. And with UMC, we're putting in our application. It's due March 31st. We hope to have it March 15th. What can you do? I think that CMS funding for residencies is not going to be enough. I think that we need to look for other ways to fund residency positions in our state. look, we're in the Sun Belt, and there's not a dermatology residency in the state. We have an older population. There's not a hematology-oncology program in the state. There's not an ophthalmology residency program in the state, and we can go down the list. We've grown quickly. Our population has grown quickly, but our GME budget has not. So I think it's going to really require discussion with legislators and discussion with decision makers and key decision makers so that folks realize the situation that we're in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions or comments, thank you, Dean Kahn.
And thank you for your time.
We will go to item six, UNR School of Medicine report. Dean Piasecki.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Dubrava, Vice Chair Melissa Piasecki, Acting Dean, University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. And I am pleased to meet with you this morning and bring some updates and highlights. On our title slide here, you see a building which we call the Moana Clinical Building. I'll be highlighting some of the programs that occur in that building, but you see it's branded University Health, and that is also the place where we have faculty and grant activity. Next slide, please. The green button, thank you. So what I'll be touching on today are some highlights about some of our programs, our centers, some research activity. I'll tell you a little bit about the Student Outreach Clinic, our Pathways to Medicine program called See It to Be It, and I'll end with an update on our affiliation with Renown. Next, please. Oh, I'm sorry, this is me. The Sanford Center is part of the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine, and it was founded in 1996 as the result of an endowment from the Sanford family. This center has been serving our community and our campus with educational programs and direct service programs. I'm pleased that in 2021, the Sanford Center was able to partner with the state of Nevada's Aging and Disabilities Office to secure COVID relief and recovery funds to support some of our key programs. For example, we were able to improve or expand infrastructure for our Lifelong Learning Institute, which is a community-based institute that serves individuals who are members of OLLI. It supported infrastructure for volunteers who staff and support a volunteer transportation program that serves Nevada's elders, and those funds went towards our telehealth action team, which is a telehealth initiative to serve Nevada's elders during COVID. The Sanford Center also is the recipient of a number of federally funded grants, such as ICECAP Nevada, which is expanding the geriatric education for Northern Nevada with a program including primary care providers, health professional students, family caregivers, and patients. Sanford also offers to community dwelling adults programs that are evidence-based, such as chronic pain self-management, diabetes management, diabetes prevention, and others. I'd like to mention as well the Nevada Health Workforce Research Center. This center is part of the Office of Statewide Initiatives at University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. And among their many projects are two annual reports on health workforce. One is on the general health workforce of Nevada, and the other is the physician's health workforce. I have a snapshot to give you an example of some of the good work that they do. These numbers are disseminated widely, used widely to help inform decision making. What you'll see here is, a snapshot from the report that shows that in Nevada, we continue to need to grow our physician workforce. And we all know that, and Dr. Kahn spoke very well to the issues around GME funding and growing GME for Nevada. What we see is that we have increased the number of physicians in Nevada, but the population has increased as well, and we have not made the gains that we'd like to see. So more work to be done there.
I'm going to turn now to some of the research programs at University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine and shine a light on a couple of our stellar research leaders. The first program leader that I'd like to highlight is Dr. Ebenezer Yamoa, who's been doing work on the hearing loss and deafness associated with aging. And as you can see, he's using very high-resolution microscopy and other mechanisms to understand and study the impact of aging on those sensitive hair cells in our inner ears that have changes associated with hearing loss later in life. Another research leader I'd like to highlight is Dr. Scott Early, who leads a team in cardiovascular disease, studying disease at the level of the cell and the molecule. Dr. Yamoa, Dr. Early, and others have been extremely successful in terms of federal funding and have raised the profile of our School of Medicine in a very strong position. For example, Dr. Early is in the top 20 of all NIH-funded pharmacologists at U.S. medical schools, and his chair of the department, Dr. Josh Baker, is in the top 10. Turning now to some of our student-oriented programs, I'd like to describe for you some of the great things our students are doing in the student outreach clinics. The School of Medicine has a tradition of student outreach clinics, which are completely managed by the students with supervision from faculty volunteers. Our students have a number of different kinds of clinics that they offer for underinsured and uninsured individuals. And as you see in 2021, they delivered over 750 patient visits in different specialties and at different sites. We're grateful to community support and foundation support for our student outreach clinics. Dr. Khan mentioned how important it is to diversify the healthcare workforce and that our patients benefit from having physicians that represent their backgrounds and their identities. And in that light, the School of Medicine has a new pathway to medicine program called the See It to Be It program. This is inspired by a film that some of you may have seen called Black Men in White Coats. And this program has established a mentor program for pre-medical students who aspire to medicine. They are mentored by existing physicians in the community as well as student mentors, and every year we have an annual summit for See It to Be It. And wrapping up with some updates on Renown, our Renown affiliation continues to go very well. I'm very pleased that on February 15th, we were able to submit our application for a residency program in pediatrics. This represents great work and collaboration from Renown and the School of Medicine. We look forward to a virtual site visit later this year, and we hope to have a residency program approved in the near future. Another Renown update is the Office of Clinical Education. Part of the affiliation agreement is that the Dean of the School of Medicine also serves as the Chief Academic Officer at Renown Health. As Chief Academic Officer, I am building an Office of Clinical Education within Renown Health. And build is the right word because we are in the process of staffing that and locating that, again, within the Renown campus so that we can serve all of the learners within that health system. Quick photo here of our student outreach clinic. They do a rural outreach clinic even in the snow, as you can see. And with that, I thank you for your support and invite your questions and comments.
Thank you, Dean, for the update. Any questions or comments? I have one, Dean. Dean Khan had mentioned the CMS possible funding of residencies being increased. Can you give me a little update if you're aware of what was the state every biennium? Recently, they've been kind of giving some seed money that the schools would have to apply for, even both our public schools and the private schools. What's the status of that?
So we are tracking that and waiting for information on that application process. My understanding is that biennium grant-based invitation for GME hasn't been opened up yet, but we are tracking that closely. As you can imagine, with a new pediatrics residency, we are extremely interested in both the expanded CMS slots that Dr. Khan described, as well as the what we call the governor's grant program.
The governor's grant program. And when Regent Perkins had asked earlier, what can we do? And that's kind of on our radar as regents and the chancellor's office and cabinet, that if that comes around for the next biennium, we could certainly nod and say that's probably a good idea to help us, our schools, to at least get some seed money for different programs.
I think it'll be extremely helpful for the schools, but even more so helpful for the state. We really want to grow GME because that's how we grow our physician workforce.
Thank you. And Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you. I'm not on the committee either, but it begs the question, Dr. Piasecki, what's the range that it costs to fund a residency? I mean, it must be by specialty, or is there like a range?
So the resident salaries are somewhat similar across specialties, and that's what the CMS funding generally aims to cover, is the cost of the resident salaries. Resident salaries are not enough for a program, however. You have to have faculty time, you need infrastructure support, you need other kinds of indirect support for a residency program. So it very much depends on the type of residency. As you can imagine, a surgery subspecialty program may have a higher cost than a primary care program. So the costs vary also in terms of the size of the residency, as well as the location where the residency is funded. So that's sort of a very broad answer for you, and I'd be very happy to give you more specifics, perhaps offline, if you are interested in particular residency program types.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Chair McAdoo.
Yes, this is actually a question for Regent Geddes. Regent Geddes, there you are, behind that mask. I remember back in early summer that I recommended you to serve on the federal delegation's GME roundtable. Have they met, and is that still going on?
They have met several times,
okay.
And it is still going on. I don't have an update for you today, but I could prepare one for the next meeting.
Okay, I just thought with the discussion and the need for more GME programs, so I'll add that to new business when we get there. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thanks.
Thank you again, Dean.
Thank you.
We will go to item number 7, the UNLV School of Dental Medicine report. Dean Garcia.
This is going to hit my face. Good morning, Chair DeBrava, Vice Chair Carter, NC Board of Regents, Chancellor Rose, and Presidents. For the record, I'm Lily T. Garcia, Dean of the UNLV School of Dental Medicine. I have multiple things to update the Board of Regents. The first and most important is the UNLV School of Dental Medicine is accredited every 7 years under the Commission on Dental Accreditation, which then reports to the U.S. Department of Education. And I'm so pleased to tell you that on February 24th, we received the letter that we are fully accredited without reporting requirements. Thank you. Just a brief update. In March of 2020, we were due for a physical site visit, and within days, they canceled and closed our world. So in April of 2021, we were the first school in the U.S. and Canada to undergo an accreditation virtually, which in of itself presented challenges, but I'm so pleased we're here today to be able to report that. Updates on faculty recruitment and retention. On my arrival in September 2019, our school experienced really a generational change because we're about 20 years old. But we had our team got together for a strategic faculty search process and were supported by the chancellor and everyone to have a search during this process. We've since hired 15 faculty that representing with 3 more pending approval and others on a search process to identify outstanding individuals with the credentials and specialization that build our stronger program as well as enhance our research. So with that, we're in process, and I will tell you, one of which is a Nevada native who left to go elsewhere and is wanting to come back. So it's nice to see that generational change. And recently it was highlighted our own maxillofacial surgeon. She's one of a very few African-American women who are board certified in oral maxillofacial surgery. She has experience in head and neck trauma, and she's a double alum, and she's a Division I volleyball player when she was here. So of course she towers over me, but a wonderful addition, Dr. Thomas. I do want to update you on a little bit on the impact of COVID and our budget challenges. So in 2020, I think I reported earlier, we had received some money from HRSA and the CARES Act, which is the Coronavirus Aid, Recovery, and Economic Security Act, and that helped us do engineering, structural changes, and invest a lot in protecting then the safety and well-being of our faculty, students, and our patients, since we operate somewhat of a dental hospital. Since 2021, we've received additional monies through CRISA, which is the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act. I know a lot of letters, but we received some additional funding. We made additional structural changes. We've also received funds of $1.6 million through to be able to update our simulation clinic, which prepares our students in a simulated environment to go work on patients. And when you think of a young student learning to work in reverse, operating a handpiece at 700,000 RPM, you would like them to practice in a simulation environment prior to contacting a patient. More recently, it doesn't sound like much, but to me it's big dollars. We received $75,000 for direct patient care to offset that care through the Clark County Commissioner's Office, sponsored through NC Board of Regents for our free dental clinics. And I'll relate to that recently, what we did. And through support from Provost Heavey and our President Whitfield, we've worked through a Senate bill, and we hope to get $2 million. And we are going to remodel and create a special needs clinic, which is advanced medical needs clinic. Typically, this takes care of geriatric populations and special needs populations, because not a lot of practices can accommodate people with physical disabilities, developmental disabilities, and other complex medical issues. So we're very excited about that, hopefully starting our rebuilding soon. So I will tell you, we don't have a development officer at this time. You're looking at her. And but what we did is we pivoted and wrote grants and proposals, and that's how we've been able to sustain a really good operation. So when I mentioned $75,000, what does that translate into? To me, it's big bucks. Just Saturday, we had what's called Give Kids a Smile, which is a national effort. But in our school, it took 170 volunteer faculty, students. We had students from CSN join us, and we took care of over 100 children who have no access to care, and provided $16,000 worth of direct patient treatment. And at the same time, our state Medicaid personnel were there to help register families who would not have known that they were eligible. So we're excited. COVID, we are dealing, although the mask mandate, I'd love to see your faces now, it's nice and in person, but we still follow CDC guidelines because we operate a dental hospital, dental clinics, and we are recipients of federal Medicaid dollars. I credit our safety record to Dr. Jeff Ebersol, who's our associate dean for research. He is an immunologist. Dr. David Capelli, who's our associate, who's associate dean for community engagement, and he is an epidemiologist. And we work closely with Mr. Ron Blaze, our chief compliance officer, to follow every mandate, nuance of CDC guidelines, everything to keep us safe. We are at 80% capacity, which I think is remarkable, because our patients make a choice to come see us. And so we want to make sure they feel comfortable and safe in our environment. Next to last, I've mentioned this before, we are 20 and 22. Now, there are ways we could be very pleased with ourselves at being 20 years old. Our focus is thanking our community, because without those patients, our young dentists do not train. So it is a hybrid education that they learn through patient care. So we will We're in planning stations on how to make a campaign to thank the community, and some people don't even know we're there. So we want to just highlight that. And when people say, well, is that competing with the private sector? Far from true. We just need just enough patience for our students to learn to be very good and contribute to our economy. And if I would, if I could take just a personal note, yesterday I was listening virtually and I heard President Pollard's comments, and it just struck a tone with me, because I am one of many granddaughters to two grandmothers who were teachers. And when you think of the turn of the century, one went to school later in life in Louisiana, and one was trained in a normal school to become a teacher. And frame this in that period of time. It's my paternal grandmother. So Julio Garcia de Vela was assigned to the Mexican building at the school. So I am a descendant of that. And in essence, I'm a teacher. And so with that, I'm honored to serve as your dean for the UNLV School of Dental Medicine. Thank you. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, Dean Garcia, for the report. Any questions? I might have one, Dean Garcia.
Please.
Briefly, just touch on the rural outreach that the school is doing. I don't know if that's part of the curriculum, if that's still in existence or it was years ago.
It is, and we're changing how we do this because we've been known for SEAL Southern Nevada, doing things up in Reno. But we, with Dr. Capelli, he's developing a four-year plan how we go into the community and taking our students there. So right now there's a new clinic in Tonopah that Dr. DeAndrade developed and donated a lot of equipment to create that. So we're trying to build that partnership to send our students there. We've heard from people in Elko, they'd like some people out there, so we're looking at what can we do with teledentistry. We're working with the Ruffin Clinic and also the new clinic, and forgive me, I forgot the thing, that is primarily LGBTQ community. So we want our students, because evidence has shown if you put them in the community, even as a private practitioner, sole practitioner, if you give them the means to take care of a population, they will. And so that's what we're going to do over a four-year plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No other questions. We will.
Dr. Dubrovnik, if I may.
Please, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Garcia, thank you so much for your work there and everything else. I appreciate it. Did you say that in one day your students and doctors, dentists, did about $16,000 worth of free work, volunteer work for the community?
Yes, sir. It was Saturday. It's actually a morning, so we have a lot of activity. It offsets the free costs, but our faculty volunteer, and we pay for our staff overtime to man everything we need, such as sterilization and providing assistance to our students.
Thank you so much. Go ahead, finish.
That's 100 children who would not have been treated, and it's really nice to partner with the state.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yesterday we were talking about burrito makers volunteering that time and, peanut butter jelly sandwich people, little things, but they were helping people for free and volunteer stuff, the ones who need it. And you're doing this for the community, especially children. My hat's off to you. I appreciate it, ma'am.
Thank you,
thank
sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. And Chair McAdoo.
Yes, sir.
So, Dean Garcia, along that same line, I remember when Regent Del Carlo and I visited the dental school, and we talked about your students and faculty volunteering in Pahrump at the remote area medical day over there, providing those services as well. And I believe that happens in the fall. And I think you're still doing that. So, it's a win-win. It's a win for the state. It's a win for our students. It's a win to teach and promote and provide dentistry in Nevada. And so I agree with Regent Boylan. We're really grateful for that.
Well, thank you, because Dr. Capelli is really working hard not to just send faculty out there. When you take 10 students with you, it changes the energy, and it leverages what you can do because you have 10 working versus one faculty. And our students are super enthusiastic, and they connect well with our community, and we're trying to introduce them to that. Because what I learned previously, if you go where you'll be busy, you can take care of any kind of debt you have. So a small town, I come from one, you can be the, what did we, my dad used to do, the big fish in the small pond. So.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. Thank you, Dean Garcia. And Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. Dr. Garcia, you're doing a marvelous job. I was so impressed when Chair McAdoo and I visited. And I don't know about the Las Vegas community, but I just put this out. Up in the north, we have a group that's called Adopt a Vet. It's a dental. You're shaking your head. Maybe you have something down here because they pair up a dentist. We do have something down here. Oh, that's good because the vets do not have any dental care. And this got started up north because a vet died of blood poisoning from an infected tooth, and that should have never happened. So I'm glad to hear you have that down here too.
We were trying to work with the VA more closely because they can't accommodate all the vets, but we do have what's called the Sergeant Farron Memorial Clinic. Okay. Sergeant Farron was the brother of one of our students who passed away, who was killed in Afghanistan. Mm. And actually, Dr. Farron is now returning and volunteers to pay for lunches for people. And he's a graduate, doesn't live in Nevada, but he comes once a year, and we take care of vets during that period of time as well. So we're trying to expand, especially the free dental care,
right.
But there's still a few costs we have to cover, so we do that. Thank you for mentioning that.
Thank you again, everyone.
Thank you, Chair.
That concludes item 7. We will go to item 8, new business. And of course, we have what Regent Geddes has already mentioned, and Chair McAdoo.
Oh, I just wanted to make sure we got on the new business agenda for Regent Geddes to give us an update on the GME roundtable. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other new business, I will go to public comment. Is there any public comment in Reno? Not hearing any. I will go. Is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Any public comment here? Seeing none, that concludes the health science meeting, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.